This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Stacey West podcast in conjunction with the Former Players Association. Really excited today. So I'm joined, first of all, by Paul Degare, as always. Paul, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you, Gary? Did you have a good time off?
I did, yes. Yeah, being a ginger man in 30-degree heat in Mauritius could have been incredibly dangerous, but I have survived it with minimal peeling, so I'm quite happy. I don't look tanned, but I don't also look like a beetroot, so it's about finding that balance.
good to hear.
So today we are joined once again by a former Lincoln City player. Super excited today because we're talking about a player who was a one of the stars of the show during the first big promotions in the Football League that I witnessed as a supporter. He turned out 140 times for Lincoln City, 118 starts and 22 substitute appearances, scoring 31 goals. He signed in 1995 from non-league Emley, and he was part of the Lincoln City team under John Beck that played at Manchester, beat Manchester City in the Coca-Cola Cup, that was also promoted the following season. And he appeared for the club in the third tier, the last time we played in the third tier until this stint. I am also delighted to say that for the first time, I have learned how to pronounce his name properly. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Colin Alcide.
Thank you very much.
That was a really good intro.
It was off the cuff as well. Wing it. We said off air about winging it. I had the numbers. I was trying to think what they used to call the League Cup back in the day. And then he said the Carabao Cup.
Yeah. How are you, Colin?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks.
Good, good. The question I've asked already on the first couple we've done is always interested in that journey of how you came into football. And can you give us a bit of an insight as to where it all started for Colin?
Oh, wow. So, leaving school, so I always played for Huddersfield Town Boys. So I was in that squad. And then when we turned 16, and I didn't get offered a scholarship at Huddersfield, but at the time, Halifax Town was still in the league.
Okay, yeah.
I actually got offered a scholarship there. But my dad says he didn't want me to sign, because there wasn't a career in football. That's what he told me.
And what year was this we're talking about?
1988.
Okay.
So he said, yeah, because dad being first, being an immigrant, and it's like hard working, and it didn't really want me to go into football because, well,
yeah,
I wasn't that bothered that I'd. I didn't want to be a footballer. I just enjoyed playing football.
Yeah, and that's why it should be.
Yeah. But at 16, I ended up getting an apprenticeship as a mechanical engineer.
Okay.
So I was doing my apprenticeship, and at the same time, I played some local football. And then when I turned 18, I signed for Emley under the Jerry Quinn.
Yeah.
I did a season at Emley, and then he went to Altrincham, and he took myself and what was it, Charlie Bradshaw?
Yeah.
And it was Mick Carmody. So there's a few, I think it was three or four of us who went across to Altrincham with him.
And how did that turn out? Because I'd done a little bit of research and I saw you had some quite decent pros or had league experience in that Altrincham team.
Yeah.
How did it work out for that season for you?
Well, it only did last a season because then Jerry ended up getting sacked.
Oh.
So I only stayed there one season. I honestly can't remember how many games I played. But then the following season, I went back to Emley, and that was Ronnie Glavin, ex-Barnsley and Scotland.
Okay.
And he was like a massive inspiration with regards to going into the Football League.
Yeah.
So, because he had contacts. He had the contacts. So he was drumming up a lot of business with regards to a lot of scouts were coming and watching.
So back in that sort of non-league side, were you playing forward or were you, as sort of I found out with our previous guests, the sort of forward tends to play at the back as well. Is that something that sort of you were doing back in the non-league?
Yeah. my natural position was centre half.
Okay, all right.
But Jerry had his ideas. So I ended up playing all across the back four. I was even playing right back. I'd playing on the wing, central midfield, centre forward. So he had me playing everywhere. Wherever we needed someone to play, then I tended to play.
Yeah.
So got some experience with regards to playing all different positions. But yeah, centre forward was not my position.
So what was a standout moment that then made it your position, or what, you know, that allows you to take that extra step forward?
That was John Beck.
Ah, all right.
Okay.
Due to his style of play, and he wanted a target man, and I was half decent in the air. So it was more or less I'd either be playing on the left, I would be playing up front. And it was literally everything. Every long ball went to me.
Okay. So if I take it back to Emley, is Emley?
Yeah.
Were you, the Lincoln were looking at you at that time?
Yeah.
They were looking at you as a different position. Is that right?
I've no idea what John watched me playing.
Okay.
I wouldn't say there was 3 weeks, 3 games in a row that I played in the same position.
That's interesting to know.
Because when I was playing basketball as well at the time. So
and I'm sure he wasn't watching the basketball as well.
He might have been the basketball. So a lot of the training I was doing was all, it was jumping. Obviously with basketball, doing a lot of jumping. So that's why I had a decent leap. Yeah. I think it was due to the playing basketball. So he'd probably seen me as and noticed that I was pretty good in the air.
Athletic, strong. Yeah.
And the way he liked to play. So it worked in, well, it worked in my favour that.
So how did that sort of then time come about then? So what, just go into a bit more, just go into detail of how Lincoln came in to approach you. And talk us through those sort of few days you had the offer, etc.
Yeah, so I got the offer. They said they wanted to sign me, and it was just a case. I went down to Sinsel Bank and signed, and then at the time, so I had to give. I can't remember how much notice I had to give at work because I was full time, and. So it was probably 2 weeks back in the day. So I had to give 2 weeks' notice before
you could actually start training.
Yeah.
So were you aware they were Lincoln were watching you at the time, or
yeah,
you just
There was a lot of as far as I know, there's a lot of scouts were coming and watching, because we played Notts County when Sam Allardyce was there.
Yeah.
And I actually had a conversation with him, and he says, "Oh, I was actually watching you when you was at Emley." He was at Blackpool at the time.
Yeah. So
he said he'd come and watch me. I'd had a trial at Crystal Palace. So I stayed there for a week, and then they asked me to stay another week, and I said, "I can't, I've got a job. I've got a full-time job. I can't just uproot and, you know what I mean, stay, do all these trials." So that never came to fruition. And then luckily Lincoln came.
So what were your first impressions of John Beck? I mean, what did you know about him before you met him, and kind of how did he come across? Because he's quite a character.
Knew absolutely nothing about him. So it was literally, I didn't really get to learn what he was like until it was like the transition from non-league to full-time was, it was really hard. It was really hard because I thought I was fit. And for the first 6 months, it was agony. My calves were, I was constantly in cramp for like the first 6 months. So yeah, I signed November 25th. I signed 95. And it took, the rest of that season was literally a write-off for me physically, because I couldn't really get my burn. It was hard going. And also how it was a lot more, the games are more intense. There was a lot more to learn with regards to like playing offside and just the different set pieces and everything like that. It was a lot to get used to.
Because obviously you came into the club at a bit of a tough time, if I remember as well. That time in '95, I mean, John had only just come in. I think we'd already been through two managers as well, hadn't we? So aside from the kind of the physical challenges to you, what was the club like? What was the atmosphere like, and how did it change over the course of that season?
It was all fine. It was all fine because I didn't know anything else. So I was used to playing in front of crowds, 600, 800. And so going into the professional game, so everything was a positive experience, I should say. I didn't know that, like playing long ball, it wasn't an issue to me because I'm now playing professionally. Crowds, big crowds, so everything about it was exciting. So it wasn't really a difficult transition other than the fitness side of it.
One thing I sort of picked up on looking in, when you talked about John Beck in a later interview, you said John Beck was actually more advanced than what people expected him to be at that time with regards performance analysis and ice baths. And then you just go into a bit more about that. I never knew that. I'd never saw that until I read that interview.
Yeah, because he had his like supplements. We used to take supplements. He used to have us in the gym. They used to monitor his body weight, the amount of running we did. In saying that, the amount of running we did, looking back now, we did too much. Because at the time we were extremely fit. We was probably definitely promotion season. We were definitely the fittest team in the league. But he was such a technical person and a technical player as well. He possibly technically was the most technical person at the club. He'd ask you to do something, but he'd show you first. So what he was asking everyone to do, he could do it. You know what I mean? So it was, and apparently he was a real, as a player, he was very, how did he used to put it? Ticky-tacky. He says he didn't like ticky-tacky, but that's the player he was. It was everything on the ground, passing, short passes and stuff like that. But his philosophy with regards to the long ball was all on, he'd had it analysed when the most goals were scored. So it's putting the ball in certain areas quickly and then getting it into the box. And his, what he found out was that was a way to score goals. So it was a Pomo position. That's that was a big one. That was and that was Gareth. Gareth was always in the Pomo position, Gareth Ainsworth. So and it worked really well for Gareth.
that was an interesting insight. So what was a normal sort of day of training like at Lincoln? But you know, when John first took out, you know, when you first arrived.
So
just go through what would a normal day look like for you.
A normal day, we played a lot of football and a lot of five-a-sides. And that was like, because there was a lot of signings towards the end, before Christmas. So there was Terry came in from Preston. Did Steve Brown come in? Who else?
Did Just Boss come in that time? At that time?
No, I think that was just a little bit later when Boss came across. Kevin Austin. I think he'd signed around that time as well. But all them guys had come from pro clubs, so okay. they were used to playing football. So John always did it. So when we had a new signing, he used to get the balls out and play. He used to be playing five sides and stuff like that. So if someone had come to look, they say, "Oh yeah, these guys play a lot of football." No, it was there is a lot of it was intense with regards to the stuff we used to do fitness wise. So it'd be hard session on Mondays, a really double session, a really hard double session on Tuesdays, and then we'd generally get Wednesdays off.
Nice.
But at the same time, he used to encourage us to enjoy ourselves. So,
and that's a story waiting to come out.
So, after a double session on a Wednesday, on a Tuesday, I've got Wednesdays off. So his motto was, whatever you did, you had to do it as a team. So he says, if you guys want to go out and get pissed, it can't be two or three of you. It has to be all of you. So it'd be the squad of us in, and at that time in Lincoln, it was a couple of bars and Ritzes. So that's what we used to do every Tuesday after a double session. We'd all be out and we'd all be worse for wear come Thursday, because
would I be right in saying as well then, so with that sort of team effort, so if there was a fight, one of you got into a fight, all of you got into the fight.
Yeah. He says if one of you gets into a fight and I find out, I will find you. But he says if you do it as a team, who am I to complain about team bonding? And because that's what it was. It was a case that we wanted everything we did. Anything we did, we had to do it as a team.
Oh, brilliant.
And then there was no limitations then, really. And sometimes there were no limitations.
So did that happen? Was there any moments in town where it all got a little bit colourful?
Yeah. There's a few occasions. Remember being in, was in Ritz's, and there's meant to be some naughty guys who were out. Meant to be whether they ran Lincoln or whatever it was. And they weren't happy with a few of us. And then it's like, we was outside and we're just talking. Then all of a sudden something kicked off and all I'm looking around and I'm seeing all the boys chasing. There's always someone chasing someone. So it was like John Whitney, John Vaughan, Baz Richardson, Kay, everyone. And I mean, there were some handy guys. I mean, they weren't scared. They weren't scared. So yeah, there was a few fights that,
All just running around Lincoln,
yeah,
on a Wednesday night after a double training day.
Yeah. So
see, that kind of leads into one of the questions I've got, because I was asking about how we built that team mentality. But do you think that helped? Because you saw, you know, you were all running around Lincoln or whatever on a Tuesday night, but if it kicked off on the pitch, the same thing happened, didn't it? And I seem to remember on one of the sports shows there was a quiz saying that Lincoln players had to be locked in the a joke. Lincoln players had to be locked in the changing rooms to let the fans leave afterwards. I mean, it's a bit of a joke, but it worked, didn't it?
Yeah. There was a lot of incidents in games. It was depending where we were playing. I remember a game against Hartlepool, and there was a lot of racial abuse that we got because we were probably dominant number of black guys who were in the squad at the time, and we played Hartlepool, and there was a lot of abuse that we were getting, and it's something growing up in the 70s, 80s for us guys was. It was normal. So, but the white guys in the team took real, it was a massive offence for them. And I remember a time at Hartlepool in the tunnel, and we was literally fighting with the stewards because they were like getting part of the people who were abusing us as well. And yeah, the boys just went for them. They went for them. The stewards in Hartlepool Tunnel, and I think we kind of probably got a reputation where we didn't get much comeback from other players. Kind of got that reputation that we wouldn't take no shit off anyone. I mean, even down to the physio at the time, Roger Cleary.
Yeah,
Roger didn't play around either. He was a tough man.
And I mean, obviously that kind of, it plays into the next season because that season, John kept us up, the team kept us up, there was massive changes. And then to be fair, 96, 97, with the cup run and everything. But it all started, I don't know how much of this you remember, it all started on the opening day against Leighton Orient with a rather unique, a minute before kickoff, Mr. Beck being escorted away. I mean, how was that for a player to see the customers and exercise taking the manager away?
Well, we didn't know. It's just that this in our heads, we're going out to play this game and we're just saying, oh, that's Becky's this is just one of his things where he's probably wanting to motivate us to go out there and perform. So it weren't until after that we realised the extent of what was going on.
So you thought it was just one of his tricks. I mean, what other sort of tricks did he employ? Because I've heard all sorts. I don't know how many are true. Things like salt in the opposition sugar bowl, flooding the opposition changing room, moving dugouts. I mean, was it genuinely as bad as kind of folklore suggests?
Not that bad. There was never any heating. The heating was always turned off in the away change rooms. Yeah, so you're probably in a cold room. Going to have a cold shower at the end of the game. Yeah, the tea was probably salt in the tea, or loads of sugar. So either way, it was uncomfortable for them guys. And we always used to play music very loud as well.
Brilliant.
So that kind of, you felt that kind of obviously worked for you that season. Because we'll start, I think, with the cup run, because obviously a massive togetherness for that cup run, beating Manchester City 4-1 at Sinsel Bank, which obviously now, with where Manchester City are, seems massive. And kind of, what do you remember about that? And do you think that kind of toughness and that togetherness contributed to that, that the players like King Cladsey just didn't fancy it when they got there?
Yeah, I mean, they were on a really bad run, weren't they? Because they'd been two relegations, two seasons running.
They'd been relegated out of the Premier League, and that season they were in what's now the Championship, and then they were relegated again, weren't they, to play us?
So I think, yeah, I mean, we were always up for, because they had the big games. Like you say, you don't need motivating to play against any of the big clubs. So, yeah, it's all the games, they kind of, in my head, they just kind of merge into one. You just wanted to perform no matter who you was playing against. But it was a lot easier to perform against the higher ranking teams, the Premiership teams and the Championship teams. It was always easy to play against them guys. Well, I always found it easy to play against them.
And which of those teammates at the time did you most like playing alongside?
I don't know. I just wanted to play. I weren't really bothered. in in the promotion season, I think I had the best partnership with Lee Thorpe. We had a good partnership. I mean, we had some games that we played in that were really, really. I mean, it felt like we were unstoppable in some of them games. And speaking to a lot of the guys that we played against, they felt the same as well. They felt the same. It says it's like it was we were like unplayable. So yeah, enjoyable times, man.
Did you play with Lee and Gareth at the same time?
Gareth was like the first half of the season and Lee was the second half of the season. Right. So when Gareth went, Lee came in.
Yeah, because Gareth, he played the 96-97, didn't he? And then he left after scoring a hat-trick at home against Scarborough. I think he was gone the following week, if I remember correctly. Okay, so rather than picking one then that you most enjoy playing against, which one of those teammates would you most like stood at the side of you if it started kicking off in Ritzy and you'd got isolated?
Well, you could count on anyone. There was no shirkers, no hiders. Everyone was there as a team, you know what I mean? So yeah, there was no concerns about anyone who came into the team, into the squad, because it was literally like that. It was, the bond was really good. It was really good.
I must admit, looking at the team, it was John Whitney, I think. He looked just bloody terrifying, didn't he?
Yeah, Whitters was a scary man. He was a scary man, so, yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, but really nice guys. It's only when they got onto the pitch that he used to switch. So, yeah, other than that, it's all the guys in that squad and my time at Lincoln were amazing. Really enjoyed.
So at one point, there could have been you, Lee and Gis Boss up top. I mean, there's not many central defenders are going to win the aerial duels against you three.
No. It was a game. I think in the promotion season, I'm thinking it was only, we played Darlington. Away at Darlington, and I can't remember, was it Van der Vos, the centre half? And that was the only game where I felt a centre half got the better of me. And that was in that whole season, I think he was the only person that got the better of me. And I was like, I was surprised, but yeah, what can I say? that in that game I think we were losing, and that's Gary Bailey.
Yeah,
came on and scored an equaliser. So that was
Dennis Bailey. Yes.
So that kept him coming on and scoring that equaliser, kept us in the chase with regards to promotion. So yeah,
last minute, wasn't it? Last
Dennis minute Bailey goal. Is the ex QPR forward.
Yeah.
QPR.
Play for Lincoln.
Yeah. That's what he seems to be remembered for.
Yeah. Now, I actually remember the game before that, which was a 3-0 win against Peterborough, which I'll talk to you about, because I think you scored a brace in that game and they hit the bar or something early doors. But actually, you're responsible, for people who are looking at home, for me getting this awful tattoo. Because the morning of the Peterborough game, I went into the tattooist and said, I want a tattoo. What do you suggest? Told him I was a Lincoln fan. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll do you a Lincoln badge. And if you win, you can come back and get your money back. And you scored two goals that day. We won 3-0. They were, I think, a promotion rival. And that really pushed us up there, didn't it? More or less sort of secured it.
I think in that game, I remember missing a sitter from a hat trick. That's. I can't remember the two goals I scored, but I remember the one I missed. That was the most memorable thing about that game for me.
I remember Jimmy Quinn. I think, did Jimmy Quinn score in the first minute for them and it was ruled out as offside? And then we were 2-0 up after about 10 minutes.
I honestly can't remember.
Something like that. It's obviously stained on my arm, so I don't really...
Constant memory there.
Yeah, I remember the game. I remember scoring two. But like I said, the biggest memory about that game was missing the sitter from a hat-trick. So
So what was this? What was the sitter like then? Since it's playing on your mind, what was the sitter like?
It's a ball kick from the left, I think it was, and I think the goal, the keeper might have slipped or something, but the gate, it was a gaping goal, and I just 6 yards out, and I put it over. So,
yeah. Well, if it's any consolation, supporters remember the two goals and not the slip. So. I'm offering you some redemption 30 years later or however long it was. A little bit earlier in that season, obviously, there was the FA Cup game at Emley. So as a former Emley player, I mean, I was reading a newspaper article earlier where you said you were putting emotion aside when you went there. Was that possible? What was that kind of return like? And ultimately, you know, how did you feel when it finished?
It was because I was out injured. In the promotion season, I played, how many games did I play after? I think I played, it might have been 27 games, League and Cup.
That's like sciatica.
That was, back. I had issues with my back. So, but that actually ended up being my highest goal scoring season as well. So, going to Emley, because I was injured and then I came back for that game at home. I was back in the squad for that game at home. And so we were losing, was it 2-1?
Yeah, we were.
And Terry ended up scoring an equaliser in the last minute. And we played at Huddersfield Town's ground. I'm thinking, was it Leeds Road at the time?
It was the McAlpine. I think it was McAlpine. The first season.
Yeah. So that was, the return leg. And obviously I'm born and bred in Huddersfield. I used to play for Emley, and then so we were going back there, and I was on the bench again for that game. Came off the bench, scored, and then we ended up losing on penalties. So it was bittersweet. It was bittersweet. You're always happy when you score. You're not happy when you lose, but it was like we lost to Emley. I'm happy for them guys. Because spent a lot of time with at Emley, so yeah, it was upsetting, but I was pleased for them. Definitely.
Did you celebrate? Sorry, did you celebrate when you?
In a fashion, I remember it was snowing, I don't know, was it a diving header, and I was piss wet through, and it was cold. I was like, oh. But it's one of the best feelings is scoring against old clubs, your previous clubs, because you know you still want to make them hate you in a nice way, if you know what I mean. Oh, that's what we lost. But yeah, so yeah, I did celebrate because I remember having there's quite because my mum and dad were at that game. I had a lot of friends who was at that game, and they were just abusing me for the whole match. So it was. I did celebrate in front of my mates who were abusing me. So yeah.
Did you step up in the penalty shootout at all?
No.
Did you not take one?
No. I must admit, I didn't want to. That was like one of the games where I was like, nah, because the pressure, like I said, in front of my parents, in front of guys who I'd grown up with. I was like, nah, not for me. I think I might have been number 7 or something like that.
I think it was Phil Stanton that missed.
He missed, yeah.
He did, didn't he? God. Yeah, it was absolutely freezing as well that night. At least on the pitch, you were able to run around and keep warm a little bit, because in the stand, and it was a cold place anyway, if I remember, the wind had kind of whipping from one side. And
the TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club. Because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Story that Mark Hone often tells, I think Graham Brown tells it, is the infamous John Beck subbing somebody either minutes after sending them on or after about 10 minutes of a game for not following instructions. One, did you ever fall foul of that? And two, was that kind of like that discipline just something that he had in him? Was it, you know, was how did you deal with it?
Yeah, that was something John had in him. I know Honey will remember it because it happened to him. I think that was the Hartlepool game for Honey. And I think he might have just recently signed. And he came off the bench at, it was Hartlepool, I'm sure it was. And the way John wanted us to play, so it'd be like, it's 1 or 2 touch. That's how he wanted us to play. And then, so Honey's come from, I don't know where he came from, but he's a footballing team they used to play. And as I said, in training, all we've been doing is playing bloody 5-a-sides. So Honey's come on, he's taken 1 touch too many. Next thing, he's getting dragged off again. So it might have been literally 5 minutes. At the most. So yeah, it was known to do that. John was known to do.
Well, there's also a story about Gist Boss, Mansfield drawing 1-1, and he picks the ball up out wide, and John wanted him to pass it, and he smashed a worldie apparently into the back of the net, and he got a bollocking afterwards, saying, "I told you to pass the ball," or something like that. And they were about to take him off.
Yeah, that's the only time he'd accept it. In a fashion, because if you score a goal, then yeah, all right, you scored a goal, but next time make sure you pass it.
So was he a disciplinarian then, that kind of with the players, or was that kind of, he had a strict model but he wasn't actually that much of an ogre himself?
It was a strict model, and he was a disciplinarian with regards to the way he wanted us to play the game. If he didn't play how we wanted to play, then he wouldn't play you. So you literally were tied into playing how he wanted you to, if you wanted to be on the pitch. But away from football, it was great fun. Like I said, he part of his motto was everything was team, and we did everything as a team. He encouraged us all to drink. I don't think he would have signed a teetotaler.
It's an interesting insight.
pre-seasons, we always used to go away to army camps. So we'd have six nights we'd have in an army camp. And that was intense. It was really, really intense. So we'd be up first thing in the morning. 6 o'clock we'd be up. That'd be your first run. And then you'd go back, have breakfast. Then you'd have a running session, say at noon. You'd be a running session, and they were real, really, really difficult running sessions. And then you go back and you'd have your lunch, and then we'd have just ball playing session in the afternoon. So it was really, 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 like 3 sessions a day, really long days. But we were split up into 3 teams. So you had to kind of do everything in. So we'd have 3 like dorm rooms, and we'd be split up into 3 teams. And for everything you did throughout the week, you gained points. So the forfeit for the team that came 3rd, 2nd, and obviously 1st would be a run on the Saturday morning, so just before you leave. So the losing team would do like a team that came third would do like a 5 mile run. The team that came second would do a 2.5 mile run. The team that came first, you just lay in.
Oh.
The caveat to that was after you we finished our session on Friday. I just remember because we was in Lincolnshire, one of the AmCons in Lincoln, and we just heard bottles rattling coming across the car, like the forecourt, the car park, and all we saw was John Beck and Shane Wesley pushing two shopping trolleys across the car park full of alcohol. So they ended up all this alcohol, so they shared it out amongst the three teams before you had to finish everything that they gave you. So you had to literally you pissed, and then there was a coach for us, and that took us into Lincoln, and then we had a night out in Lincoln, and then the coach took us back the Friday night. So everyone was absolutely wasted. But you knew, you only learnt on Saturday morning what position you came as a team. So, because he didn't want to. couldn't hold back on the alcohol then. So, But I think I did I do two pre-seasons in the Army camp? And both times my team came first. So I never had to do a Saturday morning run.
Brilliant.
Luckily.
Did you find any, was there any players that came in that kind of struggled to adapt? Because, I mean, it sounds like a great environment, but quite a unique environment. And you say, obviously, John had a particular way he wanted to play.
I think it was probably a test. It was testing people's characters. So if someone came in on trial and he'd do something controversial to him, and he used to judge people on their reactions. So if they just went into their shell and they didn't stand up for themselves, he wouldn't sign them. He wanted someone to get in his face and stand up for themselves.
Did you ever see an example of that, Colin?
I think there might have been an example with Thorpe when Thorpe came from. He might not have signed yet when he came from Blackpool, and something went on, and I think Thorpe was on the verge of knocking him out, because that was Lee's character. Lee didn't mess about. He was he's a hard man, and Becky loved it. Becky loved it. He says, "Right, I'm signing you, mate." just standing up for himself. So it was kind of an everyday thing. Every training session, he'd be winding someone up and wanting a reaction. I remember they were doing crossing. They was crossing the ball. So just for keepers, they were just crossing the ball, and then I think it was John Vaughan, and Becky's just—you just saw him walking across with a bag of balls, and as Vaughan has gone up to catch the ball, Becky's just swung this bag of balls at him and smacked him with this bag of balls while he's going, and he says to him, "No, this—I'm trying to emulate the centre forward coming in and clashing into him." So Vaughan just kind of scowled at him. And then another cross came and he did it again. And Vaughan says to him, "If you do that again, I'm going to fucking knock you out." He's like, the ball came over again. Vaughan's gone up to catch the ball. He's done it again. Smacked him with his balls. And that all the next thing you saw was his balls just scattered on the floor. Becky running across the train. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Would you get out on the training ground nowadays?
I don't think so. I mean, we kind of used to police ourselves as well. It's like if people had come in, say people had come in on loan, and the boys, you'd weigh them up in like training sessions and then weigh them up in the games. And I remember it was a training session, and it was times Becky would say to you, "Right, put your boots on, put your shin pads on." So this is going to be game pace. You know what I mean? So there's, like I said, Witters would be diving in. He loved a two-footer. And it kind of, so everyone's playing full scale. And I think there must have been someone on loan who'd been there a few weeks or a month or so. And they played in the previous game and not put the foot in. But they'd been putting the foot in the training session. And I think a few of the boys went for him. He's saying, you're telling me you're here kicking me, but last Saturday you didn't go near any of their defenders and put your foot in. So soon got put in your place. And literally, it wouldn't be Becky kicking him out. It'd be us lot kicking him out. Because if you didn't fit in with the ethos, then...
Yeah.
Speaking of the ethos and putting the foot in as well, were you involved in the game at Macclesfield in the promotion season, and what was your kind of perspective on that?
I was playing up front with Lee that game, and have you seen the video?
Yeah.
It was late on. We was coming from the centre forward position to try and get in with what was going on after Bazard. I can't remember the guy's name, but I'm sure he came on loan, the guy who Bazard.
Ben Sedgemoor, wasn't it?
Sedgemoor, that's it. Yeah. He did come on loan to Lincoln, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah. He signed for Lincoln. He was promoted with and he was part of Keith Alexander's side that got to the playoff final.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that, like I said, that's probably one of the games that got caught on camera. There was always something going on. There's always something going on. Yeah, and Baz took exception to the challenge, weren't it?
Yeah, I think so. And Jason Barnett, who had a baby face, he looked like he'd walked out of a boy band, but I think he was bang in the middle of it as well, wasn't he?
But like I said, if any of the boys didn't get involved in that situation, then they would have got ripped. Because it was a case of we stick together, we do everything together. So, everyone was there. Everyone was there.
I think that was John Finnegan's debut as well. That was quite an introduction for young Finns on loan from Forest.
Yeah,
I do recall it, but can you just sort of like just go into detail exactly what happened? Or was it just carnage?
I remember it from watching the video. So the challenge came in on Baz. The lad was laid on the floor and Baz just booted him. So then it was, I remember Sodgy used to play for them, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I just remember him flying off and me and Leah, so we just chased him. And then it was just a massive crowd around Baz and Ben, did he say his name was?
Ben Sedgemoor, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things.
Because it was a big promotion game as well, wasn't it? Because both teams were promoted automatically, or did they might have gone up through the playoffs. And it had been Needle all game because their mascot had been escorted off by the police at half-time for giving it to our fans and stuff. So it wasn't like an isolated incident at the end of a nice tippy-tappy game. I think it had been... The Battle of Moss Rose, it's still on social media now.
Yeah, I think a lot of the games were like that. Because we were a physical team. Anyone who tried to match us physically, then it always seemed to kick off. So
did that carry on after, because obviously John had been sacked, I think, by that point. So just kind of covering that period, was there a sense that he was, I mean, dare I say, pushing his luck a bit? Because I think he was coming into interviews with quite an attitude towards the end. Was there a sense that he was coming to the end of his road, or was it a bit of a shock when it happened?
It was a bit of a shock, I thought, because we were doing well. And generally, that gives you the license to whatever you're doing, just carry on doing it, because, like I said, we were pushing for promotion. I think because Shane took over, and we kind of, I think it was in the latter games, the last game, after John got sacked, I think we kind of changed the way we play in a sense, but we'd mix it up. And so instead of just playing long balls all the time, we'd start playing it short. So teams would always set up for us to play long balls. And then anytime they squeezed in, so they'd change, and then we'd just switch it back to playing long ball again. So I think it helped us, just doing that little small change helped us in getting promotion, I felt.
And yeah, whose idea was that? Was that Shane's idea?
It was. Yeah. I'll give Shane that credit.
So, and was there a bit of a party the day after we beat Brighton 2-1? Was that a mad one for the squad?
Bloody hell, the day after. That from final whistle, and we were waiting on Leighton Orient's result?
Yeah, Torquay and Leighton Orient.
Yeah, we were waiting for that result. So as soon as we found out we'd got automatic, yeah, that's when the party started. I mean, it started in the changing room. That lasted, so that was Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday day, Monday night. That was like 3 days of celebrations for us guys, because we were off until, we went back in until the Tuesday. And we still ended up having to do a fitness test on the Wednesday, because that's how we used to do it before. At the end of the season, we'd have a few days off, then you were in for a fitness test, so you could do all the, take all the measurements, the readings, your fitness, what level you were at. They used to measure your body fat and send you away with a personalised program. And you was only allowed to gain 3 pounds over the summer.
Wow.
Anything over 3 pounds was, for every pound was £100 fine. So it seems unprofessional, but it was very professional at the same time, if you know what I mean. It was all the fitness levels we had to maintain was high.
Jeez.
So one of our readers, one of the listeners, I think it's Adam Barlow, has asked, that step up that summer, so going from what would be League Two to League One, it was Division Three to Division Two, was it a noticeable change for you in terms of ability, or was it something that you felt it was kind of easier than, say, Emily to Lincoln?
It was easier than Emily to Lincoln. Because obviously you're used to playing full time. I think the big change for me personally, and Lee Forpy says the same thing as well, is because we, like I said, Lee finished top scorer, I finished second top scorer that season, playing centre forwards. And then the next season, we got both pushed out wide. I went wide left, Lee went wide right, and it was Bats and Leo, Tony Battersby and Leo Fortune West, who came in. And that was, I felt, our noses got pushed out of joint with regards, we got in the promotion season and we was never given a chance to continue that in the higher division. So, yeah. So that season was, because I ended up leaving that season anyway, so...
So where do you lay the kind of the blame for that? Was that Shane or was that John Reams when he came in?
Well, I think it's between the two of them. They were the guys in charge. They're the ones who have gone out and purchased players. And so for me, it was, that was coming to the end of my contract. The 3.5 years that I signed, that was coming to the end of that contract. So I was negotiating for a new contract. Bats had come in, Leo had come in, and they were getting paid. At the time, they were probably, I don't know if they were getting paid 3-4 times what I was getting paid. Going back to when I signed professionally, I was earning more when I was working full-time and playing semi-professional than I was. I took a pay cut to come into professional
football. Come into full-time?
Yeah. So I'd left my hometown, I'm coming into something totally new. No one I knew, but I took a pay cut to do that. And then I wasn't asking for the same money as them guys. I was just asking for what I felt I was worth.
Yeah.
I was only asking for a couple hundred quid a week increase, but they weren't willing to give me that. So it was like, I remember Reams going into the paper, going to the Lincolnshire Echo and saying something about I wasn't committed to signing for Lincoln City, and which honestly pissed me off. That really pissed me off, because during that season I got called up to play international football twice by Grenada, and both occasions Reamsy came to me and says, we had cup games, so Reamsy came to me and says, Colin, we need you. So I turned down playing international football twice for Lincoln City, and then I felt he took the piss out of me going to the papers and saying I wasn't committed. So
I remember that.
Like, that was, our relationship was fractured then. I was never going to stay at Lincoln. I was always going to go.
Wasn't Terry called up at the same time as you for St Lucia or something like that as well? And he didn't go.
Terry would have been Jamaica.
Was he? I thought he'd been called up. I remember writing an article a couple of weeks ago actually about that. So is that a bit of a regret that you didn't get to play for Grenada?
Yeah, massive regret. Because I was eligible to play for Grenada or St Lucia.
Oh.
And it's huge regret. I feel I should have looked after myself more than Lincoln at the time.
Because Leo left pretty quick as well, didn't he? I think he only scored one and was gone after about 9 games.
Was that all it was?
Yeah, he went really early, didn't he? Did he go to Brentford, or the division below? He didn't last long. It was only a couple of months, if I remember.
No, because I think I'd gone. Leo was there when I left, so I think I wouldn't have been sure whether he went before me or after me.
So was that Team Real still there, like you sort of captured over the seasons, previous seasons, when you were at Lincoln? So at that time when the new players came in, was that Team Real still there at the same height?
Yeah, it was still there. Because, like I said, they kind of got the new guys who came in got integrated into the way we were.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Witters, you couldn't get round. Witters was Witters. You had to love it or leave, literally.
Yeah.
The core of Becky's squad was still there. Kev was still there. Jason Perry came in. Was it Cardiff he came in?
Yeah, Welsh, yeah.
Bloody hell. If Witters was crazy and he was on a par with Witters, them two were like two peas. They were both, yeah, mental, absolutely mental. So I can only remember Bats and Leo coming in that season, but yeah, they came in and you had to get used to it.
Yeah. So when you were sort of like that sort of, I say, disillusioned a bit with what was happening, what players were around you, the teammates that sort of like putting the arm around you to sort of try and support, advise? No.
Oh. And then you manned up and you got on with it. Like I said, the team spirit there was amazing. So you always had support. The guys always had your back.
Yeah.
Always had your back. Remember Varney telling me when I left and I signed for Hull. Initially on loan, and then we played Lincoln. So was at Boothroyd Park, and we played Lincoln, and there was a 50-50 ball between me and Varney, and I did him
like the bag of balls.
But half time, Varney came in and absolutely he was fine with me, but at halftime he went in and he absolutely blew his top with the Lincoln players. And with John Reams and Shane, he blew his top with them.
Jeez.
For letting me go. He says, you two, you've let...
So at this point, you had gone permanently?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah. So he went in and had a go at him. Because he says, we've got people on the pitch now scared to put the foot in, and we've got Colin, one of my best mates, just doing me. Because that's the spirit we want. So, yeah, it's... but John would have expected it. Like I said, he would have found it a diss if I didn't do that.
So when you did move on, that was a little bit messy as well, wasn't it? Didn't you go on loan and then you were meant to play for Hull and you were called back and might have had to play for us against Fulham or something, and it was all a bit...
Yeah, there was... because it was Hull were... Lincoln were waiting for a payment from Hull before I signed permanently. That's what they were trying to sort out. But Hull was in all kinds of financial difficulties at that time. Well, I didn't know at the time. So, yeah, I came back to Lincoln for one game and we played Fulham away. I think we lost 1-0.
And you didn't score?
No, no. I remember going through and so it was Coleman. Chris Coleman was playing. I remember going through and it was a challenge he put on me. And he says to me after the game, he says, why didn't you go down? So I think that was my non-league, lower division mentality come against a Premiership defender who expected me to go down and try and get a penalty, but it's not how we did it. So
right. Honesty.
Yeah.
Was there one particular Lincoln goal that sticks in your mind that gave you pleasure at all?
I can't really remember. Honestly, I think the goal against Notts County promotion season. And I think I might have been up front. Were we playing three up front? Me, Stanty and Farpy. Obviously, it was a local derby. And we scored two early goals. And yeah, I really enjoyed that one because it was local derby. And we ended up doing this crazy celebration.
Not the boat rowing one.
Yeah. Yeah. that was kind of, I think that was a celebration because every season, at the end of every season, we ended up going to Iron Napa. that was kind of in celebration to, yeah, this is where we're going at the end of the season. So, yeah.
And now I'll just quickly talk about goals post-Lincoln because there's one I'm pretty sure that you will remember. You scored at Anfield against Liverpool in the Cup, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. I think there's me coming back from injury again. first leg at Coca-Cola Cup, I think it was. First leg at Hull, and I came off the bench. And I think Michael Owen is one of his early games that he played in. And we came off the bench. The first ball came up and it was Sammy Hippier. I've been out for 4 weeks with a bad back. And then the first ball that came up to me, Sammy Hippier absolutely smashed me. It just came through the back of me and I was like, oh, all right, I'm all right. So that was, yeah, so we lost the first leg. Oh, was it 4-1 or 4-0 or something?
5-1.
5-1. And then, in the second leg, I think we'd gone 3-0 down and then John Aird scored and then I scored. So, yeah, because I'm a Liverpool fan So it was, it was nice. It was an amazing atmosphere, and the support, Liverpool supporters were so nice. They're so nice. It's like just coming into the ground, and they just love football, don't they?
Yeah. And so that was into the Kop End. Was it?
No.
No, it was the other.
But
still, yeah. Nice.
Well, a goal's a goal. You don't really care which.
Yeah.
You'd had your keeper sent off after about 5 minutes as well, if my research is right.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. So yeah, it was crazy.
And did you also get to play European football later in your career as well?
Yeah, when I finished at Cambridge, and then I went down to Exeter, and I played a couple games at Exeter, but I couldn't move. I could hardly move. So I finished. I didn't start. It was all. I just played like two games. Well, I played one game and I subbed for another game, and I was like, nah, I can't take this. And then just ended up playing. It was Gary Brabin, who's It's like TNS in Wales, in the Welsh League, and it was Gary Brabs's one of his mates had taken over, and he just rang me and said, "Oh, Cole, just come down and train." So I went down. I was actually working then. I'd finished footy. I was working just part time. I was doing 3 days a week. No, I was doing 3 days a week voluntary. I was working voluntary just to have something to do. And then I'd travel over to Liverpool to Brabs's house on a Thursday night. We used to travel on to Wales Friday, a train Friday, play the game Saturday, and then travel back home on a Saturday night, Sunday. So yeah, they played me and paid me for 1 day's training and again one game.
And was that more than what you're getting at Lincoln?
Yeah. But I mean, it's one of them. It's a couple of years on, and I'm classed as a senior. I'm a senior now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. But, I really struggled. I did really struggle. And I kind of pushed on through with just so I could play the home leg and the away leg in the European Cup.
Just take you back, because you mentioned a club in there. Cambridge, was that the second reunion with John Beck? Was he at Cambridge at the time? Was there any sort of difference in his style when you went to Cambridge, or was it very much the same?
It was very much the same, yeah. Because he had success with Cambridge initially, didn't he, with Dion Dublin and who else was up front?
John Taylor.
John Taylor. Is there any player you don't know?
No comment. I do have a reputation for not having a great life outside of Lincoln City and football. So,
So he had good success playing with that squad at Cambridge. So I think he was going back to try and relive that. So yeah, signed me there, and it was probably going to be much the same, but he was never going to get the same team spirit.
The
time went on, and the drinking culture wasn't the way.
Because he did have a bit of success afterwards with Histon, didn't he? Didn't he take Histon to within the Nats Knacker of the Football League?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Histon just up the road from Cambridge. Yeah.
So yourself now, where would we find you on a Saturday afternoon? Beat up, or are you still playing?
Oh no, them days have long gone. what I'll tend to on a Saturday now, I will generally be out on the bike.
Okay,
I'm out on the push bike. So in 2016, I had a prolapsed disc. So that was actually the I'd done it twice. I did it once when I was at Lincoln, and then I did it once at York, and then I'd finished at this stage. So I was working full time and just laid in bed. I sneezed, prolapsed the disc. So wow. That the exact date, 4th of January 2016. I remember it to the day. So since then, I've never kicked a ball.
Wow. Okay.
So not being able to.
Have you had to have surgery or anything on that on your back?
Yeah. Eventually, I had surgery on the back. Yeah. That was 26th of November 2018.
Same year I had my surgery on my back.
No, that's when I had my hip replacement. So I had surgery it was February 2018, and then I had my hip replaced November 2018. Actually, that actually coincides with the day I passed my driving test.
Passed your driving test?
In 97. same date, but yeah.
I was going to say that would be quite a feat, having a hip operation and passing your driving test on the same day.
Yeah. So ever since I did my back, a prolapsing disc, I've not kicked a ball since then.
Just out there cycling, push bike. No, anything you're training for, or just literally just leisure.
It's because when I did my back, and I've got permanent nerve damage down my right leg.
So yeah,
I physically can't run. I used to hate running, but now I can't. I want to. So it's the only thing I can do really is, and it is, I get out on the bike and it is really enjoyable. I do enjoy going out, but I only went out last Sunday was the first time in 20 months. Because the hip I had done went wrong, so I had that done again.
Oh.
So the joys of being an ex-professional footballer.
Yeah, well, you've had a good career, and I just say thinking about listening to what you sort of said, talked about over the last hour, or sort of in some ways, I bet you're pleased that social media wasn't around in those 3 years at Lincoln.
They did have what was that MSN Messenger, weren't it?
Yeah. What's MSN Messenger?
They used to have the chat rooms, and going back, was it promotion season? Going back, what Steve Brown's dad passed away. And this must have been my first season, because I was living with Udo. And Matt Udonwary and Matt Carbon. I was living with them guys in Waddington. And Brownie's dad had passed away. So he came up and he says, I'm his head was in bits, couldn't relax. So we said, all right then, we'll just go round to the pub in Waddington, get something to eat, couple of pints of Guinness, right? That's it, we're done. Because this was a Friday night, we've got a game on Saturday. So I had something to eat, had a pint of Guinness, and it just seemed to escalate. If Becky's listening to this, he'll kill me. But yeah, so it escalated. We ended up drinking more. So, but it was me, Steve Brown, Udo, and Frank Sinclair, you know, ex-Chelsea centre-half. Because him and Udo were best friends. So we're in the pub, we ended up getting pissed. And whoever's bright idea it was, we ended up in Ritz's on a Friday night before we've got a game.
On a Saturday?
on a Friday. Yeah, we had, it was Friday night. We're out pissed in Ritzies, and we had a game Saturday. It was Hartlepool away.
And is it, and yeah, that's another one you hit the stewards? We're going to roll with the stewards. No.
That was a later game.
All right, okay.
So, ended up on that MSN Messenger. Well, I'm jumping ahead. So, yeah, we did that. We were pissed. We were out. Got back home. Got up for the game next day. And I was rough. Udo was rough. And Brownie was rough. Obviously, if Frank's not playing, he's all right. There's no issues for him. And we're on the coach on the way up, and I'm like, oh, I'm struggling here. And I think I was the only one starting. I was the only one starting that game. And I just could feel Becky's eyes on me. I could just feel him staring at me, and I'm like, oh, fuck, you know. Obviously. So I'm thinking, well, he's not going to play me. And then so we travelled, struggled in the journey up to Hartlepool. I did end up starting. I think I ended up scoring and ended up getting man of the match.
That's brilliant.
That was literally through fear. It was like, because I was just scared stiff. I said he definitely knows, and I'm thinking, okay, now I've done all right. I've got through this. And then the Monday morning, he's dragged me into the office, and he says, were you out on Friday night? I says, yeah. And I think that shocked him, that I just admitted it. I said, yeah. I says, with what Brownie was going through, he couldn't sleep. And he kind of says, well, yeah, he was helping your teammate. But he had reports in that MSN Messenger thing, the chat rooms, that we were out pissed, drinking champagne, smoking cigars. I think that was a quote that we was doing. Yes, we were pissed. We were probably smoking, but there was no champagne involved.
That's all right.
Brilliant.
So yeah, and he believed that I wasn't drinking because of my performance on the Saturday. I says, Gaffer, come on, I was out, yes, but I wasn't drinking. I says, doesn't the performance on Saturday tell you that? And he was like, yeah, but I'm still going to have to fine you. The only way we would have got away with that is the whole squad would have had to be now. he wouldn't have fined us. But as it turned out, Roger, Cleary physio, said to him, you can't fine Brownie. Mm-hmm. His dad's just died. He says he's just coping with the situation. If you fine him, you're punishing him for coping. So we actually got off with that one. So yeah, I blame John for that. I blame John Beck for that, because he used to make us train under the influence after. So mentally and physically, I could do it. So that was Beck's fault.
He prepared you for it.
Yeah.
Well, look, we're well over time. It's been absolutely fantastic. But we are going to have to wrap it up. I don't know if you've got any last question, Paul, at all, or if you're all done.
I'm just what 3 years you've had at Lincoln. That's all I can say. Great insight. Been great to listen to you, Carl. And
my professional career, Lincoln City was the one for me. That's most enjoyable time. Short career, should I say.
There are a lot of fans as well, kind of my age and around that time, because it 95, 96, 97, being a young kind of, late teens, early 20s, Britpop, all of that sort of thing. It was a fantastic time. We identify, I think, with players like yourself and Gareth and Terry Fleming and stuff like that. And I've had a lot of messages when I said I was going to be speaking to you, sort of saying, oh, he was one of my favorite players at the time, you never got anything past him, hard as fuck, all that sort of stuff. So there's still a huge amount of respect around the Lincoln City fan base for you. So look, thank you very much for your time, Colin. It's most appreciated. If you are listening to this and you've enjoyed what we do, please do like, follow and subscribe to Stacey West. You may be watching this on YouTube. If you are, apologies for my dog barking after 12 minutes. I cannot control that mongrel at all. Lovely. So thank you, Colin, and thank you, Paul.
Thank you, guys.
Much appreciate the invite.
And all that remains to be said is up the imps.
Up the imps.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
It's the 90th minute and all your mates around watching the imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.